Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. Well, Charlotte experienced 107 homicides in 2019, as well as an increase in other crimes. CMPD Chief Kerr Putney has expressed frustration on many fronts in his department's attempts to get a handle on this, and has recently identified hotspots for violent crime as he and the department work to end the cycle of violence perpetrated by minor disputes being solved by guns. We'll talk about that and about City Council's desire to handle this as one would a disease epidemic, but we'll also talk about preparations for the 2020 Republican National Convention in Charlotte this August, the difficulty CMPD is encountering in filling vacancies of the chief's impending retirement, and more as time allows. Kirk Putney joins us for the rest of the hour. Thank you for being back with us. Morning.
Sir. Morning.
Our homicide rate, as I said, last year was 107. I think it was the worst since 2005, the highest in a single year since 1993. But in 1993, the population was half the size it is today. We had 122 murders in 1993. Could it be argued that things are not as bad as they were then?
Absolutely. That could be argued. I tell you, though, the interesting thing is, you got to understand when you take it in full context. That growth was explosive. We almost doubled in size. But we as a city still feel that when we approach or exceed 100 homicides, there's a reason for concern.
And last year's homicide rate, 2019, was up 88% from 2018. We had 50 more murders than we had the year prior to that. Yet you are arresting more people. You say you're getting more guns off the streets. What does that tell you?
Our officers are indeed doing the work. And I can tell you what it shows me is if it were a simple solution as the police, one that the police could solve, it would have been solved already.
Yeah. Chris Herman, who's an assistant professor with the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, says large cities rarely see more than a 10% change in homicides year over year. We've exceeded that in four of the last 5 years. He calls that a huge red flag. Does anybody really understand why this is happening?
I would suggest to you no. And I'll tell you this. Trending up is cause for concern, but you have to look at root causes. And I am encouraged to see what the mayor's looking to do with mm-hmm. the overall strategy. You've heard people with the county as well talk about approaching it as a public health concern.
Right, which we're going to talk about.
I think
about.
That is a much better approach. The big thing that I caution everybody in is if you're looking for something that's going to be a quick fix, you're looking in the wrong place. This has to be an investment over time, mm-hmm. a long time, 5-10 years of consistent investment and attention, and we can turn the corner. I have no question about
why so long?
Because it took us a while to get here. We had almost 15 straight years of decline, consistent, even when other areas were struggling in the area of violent crime, and we were growing quite fast during that time as well, as we talked about doubling in size since the 90s. Yeah. There are a lot of positive things that were going on here, so we took our attention and focused it elsewhere and stopped focusing on really investing in young people and getting them on the path and keeping them there so we wouldn't have to worry about this cycle of violence.
Here's a couple of figures I ran across yesterday that I don't think we've ever talked about on this program, that for every homicide in 2019, and once again, there were 107 homicides, for every homicide, there were three additional non-fatal shootings. And Atrium Health reports an increase in stab wounds, and aggravated assaults have risen. And some of the victims of these crimes have had to endure amputations. They're suffering injuries that will last them the rest of their life. Some of them have lost the ability to walk. They'll be on ventilators for the rest of their lives. This is another aspect of it being a public health crisis, because we're paying for all of this.
We absolutely are. We have a bill that we're going to have to pay always when you're talking about that level of trauma, sure.
Why do you think that figure is enough? That's an alarming figure that 300 and some people are going to pay for this for the rest of their lives.
The main reason is what I've been talking about for quite a while. We have some people who are doing good work. We got to expand that scale. That we got to get more grassroots work to prevent that escalation of violence. I told you about our focus on de-escalation, but ultimately the big thing is we got to focus on this with the serious and consistent attention that's necessary that we didn't see in the 90s, so we can change these outcomes. And the other piece of it is, but for the great work of the trauma center, trauma centers here in Charlotte, we'd have more homicides. A lot of those attempted assaults and violent offenses that you speak of that didn't lead to homicide very well could have, but for the great trauma centers that we have here in the region that helped us save some people who otherwise probably would have died as well.
CMPD presented information from a study on crime and homicide, the city council, I think it was last week, that revealed hotspots around the city. And a lot of the hotspots seem to be the usual places that we've come to know over the years, if you've lived here for any time.
No surprises.
I spoke about this with the mayor, and you've already alluded to this, that she wants to use this database-based approach to understand why crime is happening here and where. And this is a way, she says, to approach dealing with crime as a public health crisis, in much the same way an epidemiologist would plot the outbreak of disease to figure out where it started and how they might put a stop to it. There are some on city council who don't understand this approach. I've had trouble understanding this approach.
Sure.
What can you tell me about this approach?
Sure. When you have a concentration of violence in areas, small geographical areas, common sense and science show you should focus there. When you see 10 to 15% of all your violence happening in those concentrated areas, common sense would show you if you turn the corner there, you're going to have a ripple effect across your geography. We've been focusing on quote-unquote hot spots for quite some time, but it's been myopic. It's been just the police, just law enforcement doing work there, and not a holistic kind of approach, which I think the mayor is leading, and we have county commissioners and the county and city manager on board. We're looking to really turn a corner and do something different over the long term this time to change those outcomes. And we're going right to where we know the likelihood of that type of violence is happening every day.
I want to come back to that when we return from the break. And on Thursday, we're going to spend an entire hour looking at this public health approach to the homicide problem with a trauma surgeon, member of City Council, and others. We're here with Chief Kerr Putney from CMPD, and we will continue with a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with CMPD Chief Kirk Putney. And we were talking just before the break about the hotspot approach, where the CMPD has identified where the big hotspots for crime. I think there were four of them that you presented to City Council. And you had just said that you knew about these and have been working on these hotspots for years, because they are the usual places that that come to mind. And sometimes the usual reasons, like excessive prostitution, which leads to other kinds of crime, et cetera. But now with this new approach, this more holistic approach, how will that change? How will it help? How will this approach help you do what you've already been doing?
Well, actually, it enhances what we've already been doing so that we can do it at a grassroots level. There's the concept of interrupters who go in and help. They're experts. They get trained in de-escalation and conflict resolution. They go into the areas that we're talking about with credibility because they live in and do work there already. People look up to them. We're looking for a younger demographic to do this work, and they go in and try to de-escalate a situation once we've seen violence start to escalate. They can do things at a level that we can't from a law enforcement perspective, and I think that looks like a nuanced difference, but it pays pretty big dividends based on what we've seen around the country.
The city's Safe Communities Committee has been charged with coming up with an action plan for this. From your point of view, what elements have to be in that plan?
We have to have credible people who are doing this work at the grassroots level. We've had conversations on this very show with some of the people doing the work, but we got to scale that up. You can't depend on 3, 4, or 5 younger community activist leaders to do the work. You have to have a lot more than that who can, teams like that in these areas that can help us interrupt, disrupt, and break the cycle of violence.
It takes a lot of dedication for somebody to do that. The people that have been on this program over the past years who are involved in that, they're not doing it for the money.
No.
They're doing it because they know something has to be done and they feel that they're the right person to do it because they have street cred. How do you find enough people, particularly enough young people who are already suspicious of you guys, to help in that effort?
We don't have to do it. We have people who have that credibility, who are doing the work already, who are going to increase that talent pool by looking at people and interviewing people and bringing people on board to help them do the work. This is not a police function. This is going to be by those community leaders, the young people who have you speak of, who I spoke of earlier, who are already doing the work, who are just going to get more people to help them do it.
You have repeatedly said on this program and to reporters and anybody who will listen that you want more people to come forward who know about crime to help you solve some of the crimes that you're having difficulty with. You've expressed displeasure at the rate of dismissal of criminal charges in Mecklenburg County. Among Mecklenburg County prosecutors, you've been critical of judges granting bail to people charged with murder. Has that resulted in any movement on any of those fronts?
Well, Mike, I talk a lot, don't I? I have a lot to say, apparently. I think it has. I'm encouraged.
Good.
We're having conversations with the new lead judge, Judge Trosh, Elizabeth Trosh, and also with the district attorney, Merriweather. We're having sometimes heated debates, but we're having some very good conversation. And I predict before the end of first quarter, we're going to have an accountability scorecard that we're going to hold each other accountable and let the community do likewise. I think them seeing exactly what needs to happen to have justice, and people talk about fairness. I love fairness. Mm. Fairness is more hard to find. Justice we can legally, and they need to be able to see that and hold our feet to the fire equally so that this community can be safer. I can tell you if we don't hold these repeat violent offenders accountable consistently across the whole system, we're wasting time and energy and a lot of words, and apparently I have a lot of words.
I'm glad you're talking about this. It's your job to talk about it.
It is. This is what I get paid for. You've
been bemoaning also the fact that people are more and more, particularly young men, are using guns to solve petty arguments. The tempers flare, and in the blink of an eye, a trigger is pulled, and lives are irrevocably changed.
Absolutely.
Where are they getting the guns?
Well,
they're young people. I mean,
these are very young people. You're talking 18 to mid 20s.
Right.
Very young people who should be making better decisions, but they're getting the guns from virtually any and everywhere. They're breaking into cars. Some cars are being left unlocked, and they're being left unsecured. They also, some of the more brazen ones, are breaking into houses. But I can tell you, people who see no level of accountability for their misbehavior are going to repeat those crimes to get guns, and they're doing that at pretty high rates.
And they feel they need the guns because everybody else has a gun, and therefore, if I don't have a gun, I'm in danger.
I can tell you anecdotally, that's exactly some of the things we're hearing, that they're doing it for their own safety.
Right.
And I can tell you, too, from our experience looking at the data, some of those concerns for safety are exaggerated. They're not as severe as some of the people believe, but again, your belief, your perspective is your reality.
But the same thing, the same arguments are being made by gun advocates using the Second Amendment. I need a gun to keep my family safe, to keep myself safe, and if I have a gun, I will be able to deter the bad guy. So how do you de-escalate? We can't seem to de-escalate that conversation. How do you de-escalate this on this level?
Well, truthfully, Mike, I think it's two different conversations.
Okay.
The Second Amendment, what I'm hearing is people are talking about they're afraid of the tyranny of government. What young people are talking about who are grabbing guns to defend themselves and to overcome minor disputes, they're doing it because of reputation and they feel survival. So it's two different conversations. They're not grabbing the weapon because they're afraid the government is going to overtake their lives. They're worried about other people who get mad because somebody is dating an ex-girlfriend and resort to violence. Those kinds of fears are totally different than those Second Amendment type things that we keep hearing. And people like to lump them together. It's easy to do so for politics. But the truth of the matter is, if we're serious about abating the violence of young people, we got to really understand why they're doing it. And it's two different reasons. It's not so much they want guns because they have an amendment to do so. They want guns because they feel their lives are in danger and over minor conflicts.
CMPD Major Dave Robinson was quoted in the Charlotte Observer as saying, "Unfortunately, as the numbers continue to climb, numbers of homicides, we seem to be the only ones sounding that alarm and talking about how people work out their differences in a way that's consistent with our values in this community and that don't resort to violence and, most importantly, bloodshed." How did these values diverge so starkly, and is this something the police department can address?
No, it's not something we can address alone. And I think the values have been degrading over time. Again, what you focus on, what you set as a goal and intent and consistently focus on is what changes the outcomes. And right now we've lost focus on breaking the cycle of violence. So we got to get back on track there.
Crimes have been reported at area malls, Concord Mills, Northlake Mall, Carolina Place, South Park. Interestingly, Concord Mills had the lowest number. That surprised me. I thought it was the highest. No, but it's the lowest number. Northlake had the highest number, and South Park had the highest number of violent crimes reported in the last 3 years. How safe are our malls?
Well, they're safe enough that I shop there, as does my family. It's all relative. I can tell you what you see and hear about most is how you perceive a place. And what we hear about every time something violent happens at a place that we go to shop, it makes front page news and the media continue to repeat the incident over and over again. So it starts to seep into your psyche. But relatively safe, yes, all of our shopping areas are relatively safe, but they're not as safe as we want them to be. Therein lies our struggle. So our expectations are higher than the actions we're willing to take to make them safer.
Then last year we had that altercation outside of Epicenter in the broad daylight with police and fire down the street because they were responding to a fire, and a businessman on his way to a meeting is walking by when I guess a couple of teenagers in an argument pull a gun and fire, and he's hitting the crossfire. Epicenter has more violent crime than anywhere in Charlotte. What's being done about that?
Well, you have young people, and you have the whole situation that we talked about before where they feel threatened and they need weapons to protect themselves. Well, you have them come together, you're going to have the propensity for the likelihood, I should say, of violence, and that's what we're seeing, and it's not just there, but that is one of the areas we see it happening as a hot spot because that's where young people go quite often to be entertained.
The criminal justice system, the courts, the prosecuting staff, et cetera, have been chronically underfunded for years, and this has been a topic of conversation for years. You've been saying this. They've been saying this. It's all controlled by Raleigh. Is Raleigh listening?
Well, I judge people not by what they say, by what they do, and apparently they're not. They're not putting the money, obviously, where the needs are, in my humble opinion. But I'll tell you this, too. I'm always, over the last couple of years, been down by about 200 officers, and the outputs around our arrest and enforcement of gun charges and the like have been increasing steadily because we make it a focus. So what I'm not going to use is an excuse of lack of resources, staffing or otherwise. I still have an expectation that we get certain things done to protect this community, and I expect everybody else to do likewise.
How long
have Raleigh you... is not my priority. Charlotte is. So whatever it takes for us to do that work, we're going to do it.
How long have you been short-staffed?
We've been short. Well, it depends on, again, those are good questions, Mike. It depends on how you judge short. I think we've been short ever since I've been here, since 1992, to be honest with you, but more chronically over the last three to four years.
And if the number has hovered, what, around 200, I think you said?
Yes, between 150 and 200.
The population has grown, so that means that number, although it may be staying static, actually worse.
We're basically treading water. Mm-hmm. As people go out, we're bringing about the same number in, but the growth, if it depends on who you're asking, who you're listening to, they're saying between 44 and 60 people a day are moving to Charlotte. So as you can tell, we're not keeping pace.
65 officers retired last year. I think that's close to the accurate number. 47 resigned, and there are currently, I believe, 182 openings. Is this a matter of not paying enough, not being able to find qualified people, or not being able to find any people who really want to be a police officer in this climate anymore?
I would probably go from the inverse backwards. I would start at the latter. I think people are second guessing the profession. I think they're having more financial opportunities in other areas. What we see is when the economy is this good, we struggle to fill vacancies. That's pretty consistent. The other piece that I think matters too is We have just done some intentional work as a city, council, and the city manager through our request as a department to pay our people better, to give them incentives to live here as well, and compensate them likewise for doing so. There are a lot of steps taken, but at the end of the day, you got to have people who are willing to do this work, and we're short in that area.
Well, we talk a lot about how we need to build more affordable or workforce housing for people like teachers and police and fire folks. But I read yesterday that the median salary at CMPD is $71,500. I mean, that's pretty high.
It's not bad, but you got to think when other people are making that and more and not being on the front lines.
Sitting behind a desk.
Yes, that matters too. Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's a $5,800 raise, I think, in the past 18 months. But police officers have never gone into this for the money, and it's always been dangerous work.
Without a doubt.
Is it more dangerous now?
I can't say that it's more dangerous. It's just as dangerous as it has been, in my humble opinion. But I tell you, I don't know that danger is really the most important factor.
Right.
I think it's the other thing is the lack of appreciation sometimes for this profession right now. It became in vogue over the last 4 years or so, and if we're not serious about changing that, we're going to struggle mightily in the next few years to fill our ranks.
A couple of years ago, I think you asked for funding to train 200 police officers, and there wasn't that kind of money around. And even if you'd gotten the money, I read that, and this may not be true, that I read that it would not have been possible to train that number of officers in the time you needed them. Now you're down 182. If you got the money for the 182 and you could find the 182, how long would it take to train them?
It's going to take years, obviously. Right now, what I'd say is, let's just say you divide that by three, and over 3 years, you're filling those ranks. Could we afford it? Yes. But we still got to be able to get the number of people in to fill those vacancies. And that's part of the marketing strategy we're putting together. We have had some success. We had 54 lateral incentive officers come from senior officers from other agencies come in. We're trying to replicate some of that success to see if we can make a dent in that vacancy rate, but it's going to take time.
Given the political turmoil that we're facing in this nation right now and what's about to happen beginning today, how concerned are you about what might happen here in Charlotte during the Republican National Convention next August?
I'm not concerned that anything's going to happen that we're not going to be prepared to handle.
Really?
Do I think we're going to be tested? Absolutely. Do I know that we're divided as a country and we'll see that? Yes. But am I concerned as from a policing perspective that we're not going to be ready and prepared and handle it superbly? No, I have no doubt that we'll be ready.
Are your preparations, the ones that you're going through, the ones that the federal officials are going through, and the way that I guess they coordinate between you and other police departments who will be coming in to help you during this convention, are they substantially different to what you went through in preparation for the Democratic National Convention in 2016?
The beauty of it is, no, they're not substantially different. We're getting more resources, but the relationship that was the basis of the relationship that was laid back then is paying great dividends. A lot of those key players on the federal level and here on the local level are here to do the work again that we had the pleasure of doing back in 2012. So we're much better shape, I think, preparation-wise than we were back in 2012.
And are you working together with Milwaukee? They're hosting the Democratic Convention.
Absolutely. Chief, and trying to contact the sheriff. We've been playing phone tag. We've been in conversation with the chief in particular recently, because we're sharing notes, making them prepared because they haven't seen it like we have back in 2012. They haven't experienced it. They want to be ready as well.
So I have 15 seconds.
Yes, sir.
You were supposed to be retired right now and come back in a couple months to do the convention, but that didn't work out for various reasons.
For various reasons.
After the convention, you will retire. What are you going to do? You're young.
I got a lot to do. I'm going to come back on the Charlotte Talk Show with you, Mike,
okay.
Spend more time. I got a lot of things I want to do. I'm not really ready to disclose it, but one thing I'm going to do is continue the work to empower our young people who can help us break the cycle of violence.
When you're retired, you can spend the whole hour with us. Chief Kurt Putney, CMPD Police Chief, thank you very much for being
here. Thank you, sir, always.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.